There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast bringing together the best bit of today's show from Wednesday, November the 27th. Here's consumer advocate Steve Cronin. He is the founder of DeadSimpleSaving.com to explain how UAE regulators are helping to combat bad insurance agents and any product with an insurance wrap.
The insurance authority said that they'd received an alarming number of complaints about these products. And frankly, that should be a wake-up call for all of us. That obviously, if you had a vehicle brand that was receiving an alarming number of complaints, you would just simply not use that vehicle. But people have continued to buy these products. What they have done is they have tackled the upfront commission component of these products, which is really what's driving all the problems here. So they have limited the amount of commission that a financial advisor can receive upfront. And they have capped the total commission that they can receive over the lifetime of the product. They have also introduced a free look period. So after 30 days, you can cancel. And most importantly, actually, if you cancel the plan within 5 years, then that commission will be clawed back on a pro rata basis.
So this comes from the insurance authority. So clarify for me, is this just on a product with some form of insurance attached, or is it on anything that an IFA might sell you, any financial product?
Well, unfortunately, what happens is that these long-term savings plans, which are literally plaguing the country, are insurance-wrapped plans. And so they are a savings scheme with some kind of insurance wrapper. And that's why it's got very complicated, and that's why the insurance authority is involved.
So if an IFA came to me and said, would you invest $20,000 into this product, and they played the markets for that money, that would not be affected at all. This is nothing to do with that. It's more a long-term savings plan.
Yes, so both lump sum plans and monthly premium plans are affected. The thing is that IFAs are very unlikely to offer you anything else because they're going to get the commission from these plans.
Does it change in any way the requirements and qualifications for IFAs, brokers and insurance companies to operate?
Well, that's interesting because when the insurance authority originally released their draft plans for these new regulations, they did actually have requirements, minimum requirements for IFAs and for their education levels, certification levels, and that has since been removed. There was a period of industry consultation, and during that process, this was actually removed, which is a bit disappointing.
When is the new law going to be implemented?
So what we understand is that very soon it will appear in the official gazette, and then by May 2020, all of these regulations will be in place.
Let's have a look at the difference that it'll make, both to the industry and to us, the people who are buying these products. One of the things that really leapt out at me is about the information that you have to be given now, not just given, shown and signed off on when it comes to the surrender clauses. If you break the terms of the policy, if you need to pull out your money early, they have to show you exactly what you're going to be sacrificing, don't they?
Yes, and this is what's trapped investors in the past and shocked them, is that if you, let's face it, these plans tend to be sold 10, 20, 25 years. Nobody stays in these plans for 25 years. I think the average is about 7 years for a 25-year plan. And people were extremely shocked when they discovered that their money wasn't growing at all, that they were hit by huge surrender penalties and you may lose everything that you invested in the first 18 months. And so now the authority is insisting that there is a separate document that shows in red ink the surrender penalties for these plans. Now, I would wish that there were no surrender penalties at all, and frankly, that these products had no commission, upfront commission at all. But this is definitely an improvement.
What impact do you think it's going to have on the industry?
Well, this was an amazing cash positive industry in the past because you'd get all your commission up front and then you would service the customer later. So you could hire lots of financial advisors and they would run around and get business for you. I think that is definitely going to be make things harder. We will see consolidation in the industry and I think some of the smaller players undoubtedly will be disappearing. And then in general, it will just be harder for the financial advisory companies to generate cash. They will have to service their clients a little bit better because the commission is going to be spread out over the course of the product. Everything will be that more expensive. So fewer clients probably and fewer fees per client.
Lastly, Steve, this is going to take effect in about 6 months' time. Is it in any way retroactive or is it just from things sold from that date?
From what I understand, it's just going to be for those products that are sold after that date.
Steve Cronin, founder of DeadSimpleSaving.com. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Our big talking point is new rules on how insurance and investment products are sold here in the UAE. They came out a few days ago from the UAE Insurance Authority. With us in the studio now is Walter Jopp, the CEO for the Middle East at Zurich Insurance Company, one of the biggest players in this market. Now, in some senses, these are being framed as not an attack on your industry, but being reining in some of the fees and charges that your industry is levying. And yet you say you welcome this new initiative. So give us your take.
Look, I think it's important to understand that the market is maturing, the country's maturing, and the Insurance Authority, one of the regulators that regulates investments in this market, is working very hard to ensure that we had world-class regulation here. So what they're doing is they've issued a set of rules which essentially aim to promote transparency, clarity, and a better understanding amongst consumers about the type of products that they're buying and how essentially what those benefits are. So what we want to try and do is make sure that that customers understand that they're getting the right product for their needs. Yeah, and the IA is pushing this.
How do you respond to criticism from the likes of our previous guest, Steve Cronin of Dead Simple Saving and others who say that your industry, not your organisation in particular, but your insurance industry has for the past 20 years or so been taking too much in terms of fees and the brokers you use have been taking too much in terms of commissions and that's not been in the interest of the people investing, the teachers, the nurses, the hard working people here in the UAE who give companies like you their money?
So Zurich sells a variety of products through a number of different distribution channels. So we offer our products to corporates and we do that through employee benefit consultants. They normally work on a fee and they will charge a company a fee for the work they do and there would be no commission on that. In the retail side, our products are offered through banks and through independent financial advisors. Those people are remunerated by commission. Now, these new rules, BOD 49, they aim to tackle and issue a cap on the level of commission. This isn't new just here, Richard. It's happening all across the world. We saw it with RDR in the UK, and we've seen it in Australia and the US. So I think it's a global trend of where we're going. But it's important to understand that good financial advice and a good financial advisor can make a big difference to somebody's life and help protect themselves and their loved ones from anything that might happen in the future.
How is this going to change the way that companies like yours sell these products? Traditionally, it was either through the banks and their retail teams or through independent financial advisor organisations like Global Eye, and Tim Searle is going to be with us a little bit later on. But someone has to pay their salaries, and traditionally that has been through the commission route. If yes. if we're reducing commissions, how are they going to get paid? Are we as retail punters actually going to pay them a fee for that advice?
I think that may be a model, and we're seeing some of that the advisors moving down to a fee-based model. As a provider of products and solutions, Zurich can offer these products at cost, and then there would be remuneration on the top. So that will be capped. So what it will mean is that every customer will know how much commission is being paid on their products.
What about the argument that we shouldn't be investing in life insurance wrapper type products, which organisations like yours have been producing very successfully successfully for a long time, but that we should just be putting our money in very low-cost tracker funds. For example, Drew has written in, quoting a whole slew of Nobel Prize-winning economists such as Paul Samuelson, saying we should actually be using low-cost indirect tracker products, quoting the head of the Yale University Endowment Fund, saying we should just be investing in these low-cost tracker funds. How do you respond to that?
I think, first and foremost, Zurich is an insurance company. So our primary purpose is to offer protection. We have paid $102 million over the last 3 years here in the Middle East. We're the only company that publishes our claim stats and do that. So protecting yourself and your loved ones is very important in the UAE.
That's life insurance.
Life insurance.
Yeah.
Everybody needs it, right? And not enough people have it. There are products that insurance companies offer that are actually medium to long-term products that actually have some significant benefits of being inside a life insurance wrapper. And one example of that might be that if you put your investments within a life insurance wrapper, that comes outside of Sharia law. And actually, if you're an expat, that may well be of benefit to you, depending on which country you come from. So that's one example of where it can work. These products can be offered with index tracker funds in there. So cost is important. But every individual should have a diversified portfolio of short-term investments, long-term investments, and a variety of different assets.
The last question for me on this, because we haven't got long, is in terms of the total cost ratio, the fees. If I'm buying a product from you, ballpark, what kind of fees am I paying either upfront or per year in percentage terms?
It depends on the products. We have 15 different products that have this type of structure within them, and some of these products have very, very competitive fees. Now, some of the products that we offer if you take the new DIFC due scheme that is going to go in there, the total cost, all inclusive with the fund, the trust, and all the administration for a company is 1.33%. So that is incredibly competitive. If you take the same stakeholder pension in the UK, it would cost 1.8%. So we think we're offering competitive products. We have been chosen by the DIFC as one of their main providers, so we can offer those solutions. There has been a tendency by some advisors to offer products that pay higher commissions, and they've concentrated on those. Now, what this legislation will do is level the playing field, and so customers will be more aware, they'll have more transparency and more information to be able to choose the right product for them.
Walter, appreciate your time. Walter Jopp is the CEO for the Middle East at Zurich Insurance Company. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Richard.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk insurance. Let's talk investments. Our big talking point is new rules by the insurance authorities here in the UAE, effectively cracking down on the fees and commissions that people selling investment products can levy. Let's get a legal perspective on this now. Delighted to be joined in the studio by, from Clyde & Co, their head of the insurance practice, Wayne Jones. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of this in a second. But first of all, let's take a step back. You've been here nearly 20 years or so. What problem is the insurance authority trying to solve by putting out these new rules?
Well, I think that the new rules are really an evolution of regulatory developments in the UAE. You've had in a developing market like Dubai and Abu Dhabi, you've had a lot of change over the last two decades. And regulation struggled to catch up with it. And so back in the old days, insurance regulation was carried out by the Ministry of Economy, a department of that. And about 10 years ago, a new regulator was set up. And since then, it's been flexing its muscles and getting its house in order and beginning to regulate the industry. One of the outlying areas was this regulation of insurance products. And when we talk life insurance here, we're talking products that protect whole of your life. So if you die, you get a lump sum for your family, and it's an essential part of every expat's protection. But more importantly, we're talking about, in the absence of a pension regime here, what people put their savings into and how they save and how they leave the UAE with a nest egg. And so it's really, really important that we get that right.
And the perceived problem has been that too much of the money we put into these goes as fees and commissions, either to the broker or advisor who sold it, or the insurance company like Zurich we had earlier on, or others like them. Too much goes to them and not enough goes to the saver. Is that fair criticism?
I think that there is a certain amount of fairness around that criticism. And I think that the important point from the regulator's point of view was to bring in some regulations which properly regulate this. And for and over the last 20 years, there hasn't been any specific bespoke regulation for these life insurance products. And that has been a problem and has allowed unscrupulous people to manipulate the system.
So the new rules, how do they stack up against other jurisdictions? A couple of that have been mentioned this morning is Singapore, which has effectively banned commissions, and the United Kingdom, which again has done something similar with their regulations. How do we stack up against the rest of the world?
So I think these are a move forward. I wouldn't say they're perfect yet, and I don't think we've yet cracked the perfect regulatory system. But it certainly is a step forward in terms of moving us towards international best practice, which would be the fee-based model. And commissions are still allowed, but there are caps put on commissions and there are provisions put in around commissions. So what the new regulations don't do is get rid of the commission-based model straight away. But you could see it being a step towards that if industry practice moves that way.
So where is this going to leave the industry? Tim Searle from GlobalEye was in, one of the biggest financial advisory firms. He said they've got rid of a lot of their financial advisors. The model just doesn't exist now for them to service ordinary people like myself, teachers, doctors. It can only be high net worth individuals. How are financial advisors going to earn their money now if they can't earn these big commissions?
Well, I think that the focus should be less on the financial advisors and more on the products and the product providers. And we've been working with a number of the product providers in the UAE, people like Zurich and others who are registered here with the UAE Insurance Authority. And they've all been very supportive of these moves because it does bring everything onto a level playing field in terms of how insurers are able to offer these products and the services that are available to the end customer. So the financial advisors will, of course, have to adapt here, and I wouldn't be surprised if a number of them aren't around in the next few years.
Bottom line, for the average punter, the average consumer saving money here in the UAE as an Emirati or as an expatriate, how good news is this for them?
This is good news. I think it cuts back on the ability on people to use the system to strip out or add in costs which really detract from the savings. And I do think that it's absolutely important that the regulator has a supervisory role on what is going on, puts caps on commissions, it allows clawbacks to happen when things get cancelled, and also prevents the scourge of the indemnity commission, the upfront commission that people are paid.
Wayne, we'll have to leave it there. Fascinating conversation. Partner and Head of Insurance for the Middle East at Clyde & Co. Wayne Jones, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are talking property. Having a look at some changes in the capital. ALDA introducing rent-to-own schemes for a number of its communities. We are joined on the line now by Maan Al-Awlaki, who is the Commercial Executive Director for the Abu Dhabi developer ALDA. Maan, nice of you to join us. Thank you very much. Let's have a look at what you are doing here. Do you want to run us quickly through the facts?
Yeah, sure. So we're introducing a rent-to-own feature within three of our communities that we have currently handed over, Amsam, Hadil, and Mira. We've done RTOs in the past, but not in this manner. This helps you build your equity much quicker.
What's different this time? Tell me what's different from what you've done earlier.
Okay, so earlier there will be escalations in your option to purchase your house down the line. Earlier there were certain option fees, similar to other developers when introducing rent-to-own. In this case, there isn't. In this case, we go the extra mile. We actually give you rebates. So a customer pays his rent for the first year. He decides to purchase after the final year. He actually gets a 10% rebate. Therefore, your roughly 5% rent plus your 10% rebate immediately gives you a 15% equity pileup.
We're seeing a number of different schemes that work in different ways here in Dubai. Certainly, you're busy flying the flag in Abu Dhabi. Is it all about the deposit? Is that the sticking point, getting the down payment for people?
It is, Brandy, to be honest. A lot of people are having issues with raising that equity amount for their LTV, especially first-time property buyers who don't have equity or do not have over-the-water sort of position, if I may say. Aldar's slogan has always been, this is home. We want to bring people into the property ladder. We want to give them access to owning a property. And we understand that the cash flows are there. for maintaining their sort of monthly payments, similar to this RTO feature, which we've launched out recently. But they just are restricted for various regulations or whatnot that you may have. So this gives them ability.
But you guys are a business, and if you're not getting that 25%, you know, upfront that you need to keep building your projects in general, how do you account for that delay in payment? I've seen that you're not going to have rent escalation, and there are apparently no fees. So how do you build that into the price?
We don't. I'll tell you what the confusion is with people who are looking into this is that if I was a developer with a lot of stock upon handover, that is true. There must be something going on, but we don't. We only have a handful of units within this development. It's about a 500-ish number of units, with only a handful left. It's in Sam or in Hadeel. So it is just getting rid of literally just a handful of units, allowing access to the property ladder, showing that we're innovative, getting some brownie points from customers. Simple as that. We've done. We've got our money from by selling virtually the entire development upfront. And the issue is, it's much easier within these payment plans for customers to jump in and go through the payment plan and raise that equity by the time of final handover. But once something is handed over, then you're restricted to the regulations in play. And when we have a handful of units, we just come up with something innovative for our customers, as we did today.
How do the rents in those units compare to the rents normally in those communities?
Oh, we've benchmarked them to the secondary market.
Right, so it's coming in at level.
Yeah, it's coming in at level. Even the purchase price within Ensam, for example, is the secondary market is trading more or less at OP, original price.
What happens if rents and property prices continue to track downwards? If I'm 2 years into your scheme and those benchmark rents are falling and the value of the property that I'm renting to own is falling?
You will be a very happy tenant, Brandy, because you're simply committed to a rental contract. So it's as if you have absolutely no obligations to Eldar to purchase the property. You can literally just walk away as if you're currently leasing a unit from someone and decide to have a rental reduction down the line. No obligations whatsoever. However, the headwind is if the market does pick up, you have that option to purchase at a price before the trend upwards.
So how many actual, I'm running out of time, but Man, how many actual properties are involved in these schemes then across these three projects in the rent to own?
Look, in schemes in the past, for example, we've had the West Yas RTO and we've had about 50 units there. Those literally just vanished within 48 hours. In this case, we have roughly the same number of units, if not a bit less. I think we have about only 30 units in this case. So I'd advise anyone listening in to jump onto the hotline to get one of them.
And will you be doing this again? I mean, is this something that Eldar is considering to build into all its upcoming projects?
Depending on handover and what we have left in terms of handover inventory and depending on the regulations at the time. But so far, it seems to be a success. So far, from the initial RTOs we've done, we've learned a lot with progress in terms of legal accounting hurdles and whatnot, and therefore we're able to give something even easier and more accessible.
Would you like to see the mandatory down payment that the amount that people do have to put down when they're buying property regularly fall, Man? Is that something that needs to happen?
Oh, most definitely would love to see that, because that would alleviate pressure off the secondary market, which obviously proxies the primary market rates. We'd love to see that happen. I'd love to see 50% of equity payment that needs to be filled up on off-plan before getting a mortgage that needs to be relieved of us as well. That will take up a lot of developer risk in terms of the construction.
Is there any hint that might be in the works? I mean, you guys obviously have talks with authorities. Have you got any sense that it's coming?
No, I have no idea how to comment on this one. That's above my field, my scope.
Man Awaki.
I'm looking at the current environment and that our customers are in and try to provide them what they can.
Okay, Man Awaki, who is the Commercial Executive Director for Eldar, talking to us this morning about those rent-to-own properties.
Thank you for listening. Back tomorrow, 6 a.m. on the Business Breakfast Breakfast.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.